This is WHFR Dearborn, and coming up next is our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is Jay Koronik with you as host of the show today, back from a week away. I do want to thank our news director, Susan Morrell, and also Ned Apigian for doing last week's show. So I hope you were adequately updated about the things that matter most, which are right next door. And in fact, returning as an encore today is Ned Apigian, who is in the studios with us. And, of course, he's going to be helping co-host the show. And you're going to be hearing commentaries about local news and, of course, our own views all the way through this next hour. And this is microphone check time. So, Ned, tell us about some of the stories you want to get into the show today that, as a community activist and someone who has been politically involved, even running for Dearborn City Council for a couple of times, came close this last time, too. Tell us what you think some of the highlights of our discussion should be this week, and then we'll jump into the details.
Yep. Can you hear me? Is my registering okay?
Or? Oh, that's great. But keep
perfect.
Yeah, tell me.
All right.
Tell me what you think is important, and
we'll
start the first song.
One of the most important things is we have a tax plan that the Speaker of the House, Andy Dilling, is proposing. Tax plan will get state back on the track. It says here in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But this is a very interesting topic. I definitely have opinions about it, and I didn't know about it until I read about it in the newspaper.
Well, as long as you mentioned Andy Dillon, I keep thinking the Gunsmoke show from the 1950s.
Hey, I forgot about that.
Mr. Dillon, it might have been spelled differently. Nonetheless, there was
the recall,
and there were some interesting comments about that in the letters to the editor.
I saved those, too.
Yeah, which is in the Dearborn Press and Guide right now, and so I'd like to read some of these comments.
Shouldn't we talk about the recall, what it's about first?
Before? Why don't you give us a brief summary? It's the Wayne County Taxpayers Association, I believe, spokesperson is Rose Bogart from Dearborn Heights.
Yeah, Rose Bogart is a very interesting lady who you will often see at Dearborn Heights City Council meetings, and she's a very knowledgeable woman, obviously, and I didn't know that she was the person behind it until I read about it. And apparently, last week we talked about the fact that these issues were coming out, and we discussed Rose's comments. So, essentially, you know, there's a philosophy out there, the less taxes paid, the better, the better, which is, I guess if you followed that logic all the way through, if we had no taxes, then everything would be just fine, right?
Well, I don't think we can take anything to the extreme. I do believe that there are some very, very vital things that, I mean, I basically agree with in most cases, and I think this has been admitted by even Glenn Beck, who's on CNN Headline News Channel every evening, and other commentators, is that we're basically libertarian philosophy, and that's small L libertarian. A lot of the views expressed by our founding fathers in the Constitution and other documents that they wrote a couple hundred years ago are very similar in principle, and that is that we need government, but we don't need it to get too involved with everyday lives, that liberty and freedom is extremely important here in America. But there are some things that appropriately have to be done by state governments, local governments too, and federal governments, although most of the things, according to this philosophy, should be done at the local level, if only to make sure the money is spent most efficiently and to have the least amount of waste and even possible corruption that
way. Well, apparently, because Mr. Dillon, who happens to be the representative of Dearborn Heights, Redford, and not part of Dearborn, is responsible with the governor to come up with a program in order to solve the state of Michigan's dire problems. Mm-hmm. And apparently Ms. Bogart didn't think that's important. But you got to understand where it all came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was targeted certainly as a Democrat, since the Democrats have control of the state house. He's the majority leader, therefore, elected representative of the Democratic Party and the majority in the state house. And so the last big plan to try to save the state from bankruptcy, which finally was supported by Republicans in the Senate, too, and signed by the governor, and probably a lot more that needs to be done in this time of fiscal crisis in Michigan, but that plan did include some tax increases and tax new ways to tax business in Michigan. The single business tax was done away with, but there were other business taxes that were added. And so a number of people, and we had a local locally involved activist, Ben Bacharach, here, in fact, a few months ago, who said he's in favor of that plan, that anyone that voted for the tax increases, whether they were on business or private individuals or whatever, that they should be removed and recalled. And it is, of course, a right here to petition government and to recall people, and it is just a question of will enough people sign. What I'm thinking is most interesting here is the response, the quite negative response that has been indicated in these letters to the editor.
Let's give a little bit of, there's some interesting background here.
Sure.
The audience would like to know, Andy Dillon and I ran in the Democratic primary for this state representative position, and he won. So it's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Every time I read about him, I imagine myself, that could be me making proposal.
You
right?
could be in this trouble.
I could be in this trouble. I could be losing that job that paid $80,000. But what I want to do is backtrack a little bit.
Go ahead.
When Governor Granholm was first elected, if those of you remember, people were saying, why on earth would she want this job when she would be confronted with an enormous deficit problems created by the previous administration? And now we go back to philosophy. If you remember, Governor Engler cut the spending, cut the taxes. And the philosophy of that government was to starve government. Now, we have two philosophies here. So what they did was they starved government. They took all the money out of it. When you look at the tax rate that Dillon is talking about coming back to, it's coming back to, it's like when something costs $6, you reduced it to five, and he wants to bring it, you reduced it to four, you want to bring it to five. Originally, we were talking about six. So the numbers are different. In other words, they have to go back to a number to be able to pay the bills. What no one knows is that Engler cut everything so much, that you couldn't cover your basics. That's the thing that before we read these interesting letters, people don't not understand.
Yeah, there's a history there too. I think it's very unfortunate that the legislature, our elected representatives, and there was a lot of partisanship going on there between the Dems and the Republicans. That things couldn't have been done sooner, even to redirect state funding and investments, because we're in a pretty bad crisis now, and it continues. The buyouts and the taxation changes are not really even much taking effect now, and there's more that has to be done. But it's too bad that, and I think it's too bad too. And I've said this, that there couldn't be some new directions, some really new ideas that could been come up with for the state. I do think that the Governor Granholm's suggestions in her State of the State address a couple months ago for investing in new energy programs, alternative energy programs for the state, and making that making us number one, in fact, in going that direction is
absolutely
great. But we haven't even started that, folks. I mean, and Michigan is should be there anyway for all kinds of reasons, and we should not even consider for a second dragging our heels on some of the new directions that the governor suggested, because we need the payback, we need the income from any successful new industries as soon as possible. Well, here's just a couple of ideas. I'm not going to read all the letters.
Well, we can take turns. You read one,
well,
and I'll
we
read
could.
One.
Ned's got his. But so follow my lead here. On the first one, and this is in the Press and Guide, where they've got four letters on this issue this week on their opinion page. The first one says that in the summary, the headline of it that the newspaper added, that State Representative Dillon's recall is unnecessary because he's up for re-election in November. So if you really want him out of there, just vote against him. Vote for someone else, hopefully someone that doesn't want the taxation increases in that sort of simplistic way of thinking. The person says to the editor, in the era of term limits, recalling state legislators like Andy Dillon is a waste of time and money. Think about it. Members of the State House of Representatives are up for re-election every 2 years. That means if you dislike something our legislator does during his first year in office, you have a guaranteed opportunity to vote him out of office in the very next year. If you're thoroughly disgusted with your representative, the news gets better. You're guaranteed to be rid of him once and for all after 6 years in office because he's term limited out after 6 years. In the case of Speaker Dillon, the person, and this is a mercy Bialik. Bialik, it looks like, from Redford.
Bialik.
Bialik, thank you. It says that she has no problem with him voting on a revenue solution that he was basically forced into. And I like a lot of the things he's done for the district. What I do have a problem with is people trying to use my tax dollars to fund a separate ballot initiative to remove Dylan from office when, if I really wanted to, I could vote him out of office in November at no additional cost. So I guess just summing up here that it has to be a separate, it does it have to be a separate election, or is there just a ballot proposal on the November election that they're trying for? There's not much time before that November election. I guess there's time enough to get a separate proposal there for the local voters, but it's true, he's up for re-election anyway, and so why not just work for
makes too
some
much
other
sense.
Yeah,
I mean,
for some other
how
one,
much time is there between now and then?
Yeah. The next letter, Ned, why don't you try to summarize this? Someone
this
is actually
has to do
shocked.
With unhappy with Bogart's conduct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we get a little background into Rose Bogart and her recall effort. I wasn't shocked to hear about Rose Bogart's fiasco at the Redford Post Office. This is the same woman who encouraged the readers of her blog to go in on an event in Lansing and interrupt her opposition interviews. She also instructed them to bring cameras along and intimidate people on government property who disagreed with them. At least she's consistent in the way she attempts to bring attention to herself and her causes, even though her MO seems to be breaking laws and acting juvenile.
For those people who don't know that criminal talk, that's modus operandi. The way that she operates, okay.
Oh, the M.O., yeah.
The M.O., yes.
Latin, I guess.
Yes, yes.
Imagine all the things you need to know in Latin mm-hmm. so you can understand. So this issue, now you got the term limitations in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of us, you know, a lot of people thought that was a real great idea, but one of the things that I learned from some of the people in local government is because of term limitations, we were losing people in the state legislature that were expert in appropriations and taxing and budgets. And then there are people coming in who knows what their backgrounds are. There wasn't anybody that's really proficient. You look at the federal committees, those people have been on those things so long, they can give you a history lesson on what these things are all about and how they function. So when you bring brand new people in to try to do a job they don't understand, you end up with problems.
And as Gary Warrenchuk, who was term limited out of being our local representative, has mentioned to me, you know, he was a Republican and then he became a Democrat.
He needed the jobs.
Yeah, but of course now he's with Wayne County and they don't have term limitations
right.
there.
That's
he can be a Wayne County commissioner as long as he wants to, as long as he can get reelected. But as he said, what happens, it's not just the lack of experience, but it's the lack of power you get from being committee chairman and so on. You have a lot of newbies there, and so no one really has that much power. And so who controls, who gives the information? It's the lobbyists. The lobbyists that control our legislature, the influence
right.
peddlers, some of whom are stating their case in a
they
fair and appropriate
knowledge.
Way, but they have the knowledge. Do you want the people with the knowledge and the savvy to be someone that you don't elect? I don't think so. Now, of course, our deceased past mayor, Mayor Guido, has said, and as many people have, and I think a lot of people who are even for term limits now realize, is that we have this thing called elections, and we can vote people out if people would vote. And very few people vote, but we have the power. Now, we also, and I'm complete supporter in citizen activism, and Rose Bogart speaking her mind, organizing people, even to the extent of some civil disobedient acts. You might say, well, she's breaking some laws, maybe, making it hard for government to function as usual. But if she feels that strongly that something will not right itself without a little bit of friction applied to the wheels of government, then that is a way to do it. And it means that she's also willing to maybe get a fine or a ticket or spend some time in jail. But that is what civil disobedience is all about, and protest. And I am all in favor of those people who feel so strongly having the right to state their opinions. And if they do break some laws, then they will be appropriately punished, of course. And some people may not like that, but at least they are involved. And anyone who doesn't, who's number one, not registered, number two, doesn't vote regularly, number three, doesn't do informed voting by trying to keep up with the issues, like listening to this show.
Or any other, like.
Right, and read the local papers, because we don't present enough information for you to know what to do, folks. You've got to read these papers yourself. There's a lot more stories out there, a lot more information to find out about.
Dylan's not the only one. There's a total of 12.
Well, yes, yes. They finally decided that, well, he'll be the symbolic core of it, you know, that he would be.
You know, Dylan has an excellent background and reputation. For a Democrat, his prior business was making companies, buying them, putting them back together, reorganizing them. He is quite an expert. I know my own feeling was, he used to tell me, if I don't win, I hope you win. And I say, well, if I don't win, I hope you win. He was one of the few people I regarded that had more on the ball than I did, because he understood issues about business that I didn't. I'm a dreamer, an architect, a planner, but Dylan is a guy that knew numbers.
Yeah, I'd like to have him on the show sometime, not to defend himself, because I don't know.
We could arrange that easily.
Oh, yes, and I'm sure he's back in the area frequently.
3 days a week, for sure.
Why don't you try to see if your contacts still hold with him and
try to
get him here.
I see him with the architects and engineers, little political advocacy group we have. We meet with the politicians in Lansing as designers and planners and engineers.
As I said, I'm going to cover the third letter now. As I said, that this is not really just a Democratic issue. It was Democrats and Republicans together that had to vote for these tax increases, as well as our governor signing the bills. And we needed something, or we'd be in great, great deal of trouble right now. Now, again, some of the cuts and some of the programs that could have been eliminated, that some people, including the Wayne County Taxpayers Association and Libertarian Party, might have thought appropriate, were not considered. They are not the normal sort of thing to be considered, and therefore no one wants to do something too radical, do we? I think we should consider some of that, but we didn't. That was rejected. The majority said, no, we don't want to do anything too unusual, even if it would be a good idea, and I think that's unfortunate. But the third letter says that the recall clearly is not a party issue. They say, and this is Geraldine Shalikas from Redford, they say that the recall effort against House Speaker is a joke, and it isn't even a party issue. It's simply about a special interest group trying to trick us into unseating our own homegrown House Speaker in order to demonstrate its power. If you look at the recent legislation proposed in the Senate, there have been two bills, Senate Bill 1086 and Senate Bill 1087, and a resolution introduced to try to make the willy-nilly recalling of legislators more difficult. Of these three acts, two of them have been introduced by Republicans. Despite the fact that the Taxpayer Alliance has singled out the Democratic legislators for the most aggressive recall attempts, it is clear Republicans are equally as outraged by the attempts to unseat elected officials as the Dems are. And she says there's no need to spend tax dollars to unseat them. Why would we want to anyway? Of the 110 districts in Michigan, we're the only one privileged enough to be able to say that the Speaker of the House personally represents us.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah. And again, the Republicans are just as much a taxes spend party as a party, certainly as a national party, as the Dems. And if you don't believe in that, then take a look at the record nationally. That's what I say, folks.
It's not even tax expend. It's tax. No. It's borrow and spend.
Right. And in fact, the president.
Worse.
If you want to set aside the cost of the war in Iraq, if you look at all the recent U.S. presidents who came into office and oversaw and approved massive increases in federal government spending, that person, with the numbers equaled out for inflation and so on, was Ronald Reagan, even though he was preaching small government, and he's seen to be a god of small government. I know
gigantic
what he was preaching,
deficits.
But the huge increase in deficits that he oversaw were totally contradictory with what he was telling people about. In fact, there is an interesting contradiction between what presidents say, not only when they're running for office, but when they're in office and what they actually do.
And no war.
Well, right. Yes. Yeah.
We're talking about major conflict.
Yeah, yeah. And that is a whole separate budget financial issue, and it does impact on our budget, this huge amount of expense for foreign wars.
Which is not budgeted in this case.
Right.
You talk about really foolishness, fighting the war and not increasing taxes, the idea to reduce tax.
Right. It's gonna hit us real soon, and George Bush will be out of office at that point, one, because he's term limited, too.
His father called it voodoo economics, remember?
That's
that?
Right. When he was running against Reagan for president himself at that point, which he changed his tune, of course, as soon as he became Reagan's vice presidential candidate. But the trickle-down theory doesn't hold up, folks.
Yeah, they're trickling down on you.
You cut the taxes at the top and or give businesses huge tax breaks, it doesn't mean that business is going to decide to all of a sudden employ more people to give higher wages to the people that they employ. It doesn't work that way. It didn't work that way. And George Bush Sr. was very accurate about that. There doesn't make any sense. Now, a few of us who are libertarians, we would actually like to see, and I'm very very much a supporter, as you may know, Ned, of the fair tax, the whole provisions to do away with our current income tax system and replace it more with consumption taxes. And the only presidential candidate other than Ron Paul, Republican, who is actually more a true-blooded libertarian, where he ran for president back in 92 as a libertarian, is Governor Huckabee, former governor of Arkansas, that Mike Huckabee is for the fair tax. That's not a radical idea, folks, and I know you can't just call it fair tax, and maybe it's not fair if you look at it. Maybe you're not in favor of it.
I suppose you can give any nomenclature you want to
right.
something.
But if you look at the details of it, and I suggest our audience might want to,
to get an idea of it, just go to Windsor and buy something.
Okay.
They have that, what do they call it, GPS, GTV, yep. They got a name.
That's 14% tax, right.
14% on everything you buy. Go ask the Canadians.
GST, I think.
GST, something.
GST,
like
right.
And if you're an American and you make a big purchase, you're supposed to be able to get the back.
They will send you a check.
Half. You can do it
border.
At the bridge.
Right.
You only get half back.
Right.
And
yeah.
You have to expend a certain amount.
Right, yeah. So you have to spend a certain amount in the first place. Well, the last letter is sort of a recap. Audrey Pleasant from Dearborn Heights, again commenting on the recall effort of House Speaker Andy Dillon. She says, I have an article about the firefighters' support of House Speaker Andy Dillon in front of me, and I can't help but laugh at the silliness of Rose Bogart. Her most salient point about the necessity for recall seems to be her outrage that Speaker Dillon sent her mother a birthday card, as if that's the worst possible misuse of money. I got
one, too.
I not only got a birthday card, I got a certificate from the woman who represents us in the East Dearborn area.
Uh-huh.
And I won't even mention her name now because maybe some people won't think that's appropriate. But, it wasn't something that the State House voted on, but it was done up as a printed certificate.
This is a good thing that now that you mentioned it, when you're talking about candidates versus incumbents,
mm-hmm.
you have to realize that when you're running against an incumbent, they have free franking privileges.
Yes.
Franking privileges mean they get to mail at no cost to themselves. Presumably, the state pays for it.
Yes,
the post office is not free.
Mm-hmm.
You know those little brochures you get with the face of your local representative or state senator? And he gets to mail those out to you four times a year. You get to see his face. You get to be acquainted with his name. And you ought to try to mail something to about 30,000 or 40,000 households and see what that costs. I have. And then when you compete against that, people get to recognize those names. The names mean something. They remember the name.
There's no doubt there's
so
a political.
So that's where the happy birthday comes from.
There's political advantage in even sending out the newsletters. Hey, folks, here's what I did for the last 6 months.
And it isn't even true.
Well, maybe it's their spin on what they did and what they supported. I do like, the one thing that I happen to like is the questionnaires that they send, even though they're not done scientifically. But I like to have a questionnaire for my local representative about issues that are in front of them and issues that could come further. I'd also like it, though, if they would include a form for new ideas. I guess they want me to write a letter separately if I have a new idea. But usually the questionnaires are just on do I support some of the old ideas that have already been up there or not. And what's interesting is I never get a tabulation of the results of the questionnaires. I mean, you would think that they would want to do
usually
that somehow.
Usually they're requests for money. They're not really the ones.
Well, there can be that, too. This is ironic, though, in terms of my representative saying congratulations on your birthday. It was belated birthday. They actually missed the date. So I got a certificate saying congratulations on your birthday, even though we missed it. So
usually they do that if you're 100 or something. You're far away from that.
Well, thanks, Ned. But
you're far away from that. You know what we should do? We ought to do that interview. We've been talking about Dylan for 25 minutes, and he's got another more important issue about taxes on home sales we could get to after we do that famous interview.
Folks listening are probably tired of Ned's voice, not Ned's voice, but my voice. So I just like to play a new voice here, a voice you've heard once or twice on the show about the stimulus package, about the letter that I got, apparently Ned got in the mail about it.
Those
extra checks coming to us, $300 or more. And here's the opinion, this is just 2 minutes long, folks, of Jim Hightower, who's a political commentator and a writer of books. He's got a new book out. I won't mention it. We don't want to plug a private profit thing. But a very stimulating thinker. And this is Jim Hightower on the economic stimulus package.
Set. Stimulate. Washington is about to mail $600 checks to you, me, and nearly everyone else. Unless you're poor, then you only get half that. The checks are to prompt us to go shopping, as George W. so eloquently sums up our chief duty as citizens. This is Washington's bipartisan plan to stimulate the American economy and avoid a recession. Well, they're a bit late for most Americans since the working class majority sank deeply into recession long ago. But there's also a basic flaw in Washington's strategy of using shopping as an economic stimulus. Most of the stuff we'll buy with our government checks is made in China or other low-wage nations. So our so-called leaders are shipping $168 billion from our public treasury for a stimulus program that essentially will stimulate foreign economies. Goofy, huh? Meanwhile, back at Ranchito, USA, there's lots of stimulating that could be done, returning a huge benefit to our people and our nation for every dollar spent. Even as Bush and Congress were telling us to go shopping for foreign stuff, a federal commission issued a startling report calculating that we need to be spending $225 billion a year for the next 50 years just to maintain and upgrade America's vital infrastructure of roads, bridges, and transportation systems. That doesn't count our decaying water systems, sewage plants, dams, and schools, nor our inadequate internet and phone systems, our flickering power grid, and the exciting potential of building a new green energy infrastructure. This is Jim Hightower saying, you want stimulation? Let's invest our public dollars in a grassroots recovery program that will put millions of skilled laborers, entrepreneurs, inventors, small business people, and others to work rebuilding America's future. A good job at good wages, doing good work, beats a $600 check any day.
This Jim Hightower commentary has been brought to you by the United Steelworkers, the union committed to winning every employee's right to choose representation free from fear of being intimidated or fired. Visit us on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
That's an opinion from Jim Hightower. He is a nationally known commentator. He has a little newsletter, the Hightower Report, I think it's called. And yes, he's a progressive, folks. But I just want to indicate, too, about those checks. Maybe Ned has a brief comment, and then we'll go on to another tax issue here, that my reading of that very complicated letter that came in the mail does indicate that if you're going to qualify for any money at all, number one, you have to file your 2007 taxes. That is the taxes, the tax forms that are needed for last year's taxes, which, you know, April 15th coming up in just about a month here, folks, that you have to. So once you file that and once they see what your taxable income is, and again, that's probably subtracting a couple of deductions at the top. If it's over $75,000 a year, that's a wonderful thing for you, but you're not going to get any money back. Probably not.
There was something about $150 at the bottom of that letter that you might get $150.
Yeah. I don't know what the situation, the criteria is. Even that letter, which was relatively small print, very confusing, they don't go into great detail what that is. And remember, as Jim Hightower mentions, for this stimulus to work, you're to take that money, if you get any, and spend it foolishly. Well, or spend it on something that you can't pay off a debt to help the country. That
oh,
you
we can't. Oh,
no, if you pay off a debt or put it in savings, it won't generate any economic advantage. Won't keep people in jobs or cause new jobs to be formed. So the whole concept is crazy because the smart thing to do.
And how would they control that?
Well, they can't control it.
So
but I'm saying that the whole issue about it is
stupid.
If you do not take the money and spend it on something, on anything, but if you, it won't have any advantage for this country's economic situation, which is terrible because therefore the idea behind it is something that is actually not good for you as an individual. Most of us, we have some credit card debts or we don't have enough savings in the event of an emergency. So if you get free money, new money, you shouldn't spend it on something unless you already have adequate savings and get this, no debt.
I didn't realize they said that.
Well, any economist will point this out and our politicians are pretty stupid when they're voting for this. They just think it's Gesundheit there. I should have turned his mic off,
yeah,
but I didn't.
I didn't.
It came quick there, that little sneeze.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, our politicians, they think, oh, well, we'll get political advantage by giving money to people, and everybody will like that, and they'll reelect us. In fact, it's just a political a ploy, because if the politicians really were doing something for us, they would, and for the country as a whole, they would suggest that we pay off debt, number one, and number two, if our debts are paid off, make sure that we have at least a couple of months of income saved. That's what they all recommend. 2 or 3 months of money equal to the income that you would normally get.
I thought it was a year's salary.
Well, that would be better, but at least a couple of months. You know, a short-term problem or a crisis comes up, at least a couple of months of income should be saved. And almost no one in this country is in that situation. So if this stimulus on these checks are going to do anything for our country and for keeping people in work and in jobs, you got to go spend the money foolishly. I don't recommend that, of course, and therefore it won't have any advantage for the country and the economy as a whole. No more people will keep their jobs. No more people will be back to work if you save it or pay off debt. And that's sad. That's very sad, which means it was a bad idea at the outset, folks.
Well, the important thing that you brought up, that people cannot get the money unless they file.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that probably don't file and think the government's going to send them money. And there's a lot of people that I have talked to, they said, well, I just don't file, I don't need to. So so for me, it is not a penalty. If I'm going to get something back, and I'm not sure what it is, because I only went to college 10 years, and I can't figure out that letter.
Yeah, I know. Well,
and,
a lot of us that have, like someone in this room that has 2 master's degrees, Ned, I got one more than you do.
Oh.
I can't figure out my taxes without a computer program to help. You know, and I think that's terrible.
So that I don't, that
we
letter,
have a, we have a taxation system. That's why I mentioned the fair tax wouldn't require an IRS. It wouldn't require filling out tax forms, folks. And that means that even a person without a high school education will still be paying their fair share of taxes.
Well, something has to be done about that. For example, I think what they're promoting is if you're a family of four and you make $20,000 or less, you will get a refund. But in order for you to get a refund, you got to send in something that says, this is my income, it's $20,000. So yep. It may not be as complicated. And I don't know how it really works. I've never studied it because I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
You wanted to share something about the tax bill, the new.
The important thing here, we've been talking about Andy Dillon and why he was a bad guy, but here's something that's important. He's proposed a tax plan that will get the state back on track, he says. Actually, I talked to him about this idea once, but I didn't know. He really expanded it from what I suggested to him. And I'm going to read it here so that we don't get mixed up on it. During a press conference in Dearborn Heights, Speaker Dillon called on the members of the Michigan Senate to help pass a home buyer stimulus package that has remained in the legislative limbo since it passed through the House. Okay, here's the plan. The plan creates an 18-month window during which anyone who buys a house will inherit the seller's taxable value and will not have their taxes uncapped for as long as they own the house. Now, this is a fantastic thing. I think this is going to cost local communities a small fortune. No one says that in here in this article. Mm. But what happens here, without trying to read the article, foreclosures are talking about 70% in 1907. Here, 2000. So let's say you are a senior citizen. And this is what I suggested him once. Because here, seniors have these four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath, living room, dining room, family room homes that they're either empty nesters and they want to sell them. Mm-hmm. And they want to buy a two-bedroom bungalow and they don't want to move into an apartment. And guess what, folks? They can't do that, because if they do that, it's going to cost them a small fortune, because they're living in a $200,000 house that's tax capped and they're paying maybe $6,000 a year, and they want to save that, but they're going to move into a $100,000 house that's going to lose its tax cap, which they're paying maybe $1,800, and go to $5,000 or $6,000. That tax capping, uncapping of the Proposal A and that we had is the thing that they're talking about here.
Ah.
But for 18 months only, mm-hmm. other words, that's going to encourage you to buy somebody's house because you're going to get their tax cap. My own house, my house taxes must be around $2,400 a year, which is not much.
No, that's good,
when
actually,
you stop
yeah.
and think mm-hmm. about it. I have neighbors when I was campaigning on the streets, on my street, paying $12,000 and $14,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my house is not as big as theirs, but what would happen if I sold my house? Let's call it a $200,000 house. That house that would lose its cap, and you would be paying $5,000 or $6,000 on the same house that I'm paying $2,400.
I see.
Now, what Dillon has figured out is for 18 months, we want to encourage you to buy those other houses, and you'll keep their tax cap for life.
Uh-huh.
That's different than what I was talking to him about. I was talking to him, you have to be a bona fide senior citizen, over 65.
65, oh.
And then you want to buy down. You want to get out of your big house and want to get into a small one.
Sure.
And not be penalized. This, almost everybody that wants to buy a house, if they buy it in the next 18 months, going to cost local government a fortune. That's what's keeping Dearborn Heights and Dearborn afloat. Because every time there's a house sale, their property tax increase.
Yeah.
Now, the whole article about that, this is a real significant thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Much more generous than I would propose. This is going to call.
It's not out of the House committee yet.
No, I'm saying right, yeah. This is not going to bring. This doesn't cost the state anything, but it costs local government everything.
Yeah, which means it might pass at the state level because they won't hurt them.
I have not thought about that.
We'll have to. Obviously, if it's not out of committee yet, it's not in danger of passing. But I can imagine that the local mayors, both in Dearborn Heights and of course in Dearborn here, Politko and O'Reilly, probably would not be in favor of that. If it costs the local. Cities any money.
Well, that's
money,
what's keeping them afloat. Here's a couple quotations that I thought was important. Currently, the assessed taxable value of a home has strict limits on how much it can increase annually. In case you didn't know that, this is very important. Mm. Your taxes can only increase annually either by 5% maximum or the rate of inflation, whichever is lower. Now, this year I got my tax bill in Dearborn Heights, and the rate of inflation was 2.3%. So my tax assessments went up 2.3%. So I go to the assessment department, which all of you should do, and find out whether the numbers meet that 2.3%. If they meet that 2.3%, that means that you don't have to go before the tax commission and argue a point because you're wasting your time. That's what government, the rules require.
Sure, yeah.
And then it goes on to say, however, when the property is sold, its assessment is uncapped. In some cases, the amount of taxes a new homeowner must pay doubles, making it difficult for working families to be able to afford to buy a house. That's the problem. The sales of higher-end homes are staying stable in the current market because those people want to upgrade from smaller homes to larger homes, but they lose their cap as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the taxes compared to what they've been paying, they know they can't afford it. And when they realize, by the way, a real estate person, when they're taking you around to show you the house, is not going to give you that little bit of information unless you ask. They're only interested in making sure you buy the house. You buy the house, they get the commission. You get the tax bill. This is a relatively important subject for the average person to understand. And this is what people don't understand. I know from knocking on doors, running from office, people would come to me and they say, well, will you lower my taxes? And I said, well, if anybody tells you they're going to lower your taxes, guess what? They're lying to you because they don't control it.
Let's have a little break here, and we're going to do a couple of public service announcements, which we totally believe in, folks, because we're not required to play these, but it's a great thing, and it's not commercials. So we'll be right back with more of the new WHFR Journal with Ned and Jay.
Here yet? Everyone wants to know where their tax refund is. Old Iris here knows how to answer that burning question. Go to irs.gov and click on Where's My Refund? In English or Spanish, enter your Social Security number, filing status, and refund amount to get the answer instantly. Where's My Refund will also tell you if there's a snafu and how to get your refund back on track. irs.gov. See how we can help you.
Hungry?
The Skylight Cafe is convenient and offers a variety of food options to hungry students and staff.
Pizza, daily specials, sandwiches, and entrees.
How about ordering something hot off the grill?
Or if you just want a snack.
The Skylight Cafe has cookies, desserts, chips, fresh fruit, and a wide variety of beverages.
There's even a soup and salad bar. Ours are
Monday through Thursday, 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. and
Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m.
The Skylight Cafe.
I don't have
We're
that.
Back with the new WHFR Journal. Yes, we do have it, Ned. I have in front of me information from Frank Buick's opinion, his 30+1 column from this last Wednesday, March 12th.
We're talking about the, primary.
Whether or not the Democratic primary, at least, is going to be redone here in Michigan and perhaps in Florida. Those were two states that most people remember now, as it's on the national news for the last couple of weeks, that are forbidden from having any of the outcomes of their ballots represented at the Democratic National Convention because they moved their elections up earlier than what the rules said they should have them.
Venal sin.
And of course, they knew what they were doing, but they thought, well, they'll turn around and let the will of the people, if you will, in the state of Michigan and Florida be reflected when the election time came. And of course, here in Michigan, Some candidates took their names off the ballot, like John Edwards and Barack Obama, although Barack Obama's supporters clearly sent out the message that that you should vote for uncommitted. And that was a choice in the Democratic primary. I believe that Dennis Kucinich's name was on the ballot. I know someone that voted for him in the Democratic primary. Oh. And, of course, Hillary Clinton's name was there, too. So there's a number of interesting issues.
Florida
here.
Was different. Their names yes. were on the ballot.
Well, every Florida. State is a little different. Again, there's no national primary rules. It's not in the Constitution. These primaries are set up by the ruling Democrats and Republicans of the states. They never include third parties, because they don't want to give publicity or even admit that there is such a thing as a third party or a fourth or a fifth party out there, and there certainly are. And they're publicity machines for the Dems and the Republicans. And most of them do not accurately represent the will of the people. And there's always the question of who is a Democrat and who is a Republican. In Michigan, you could vote in either one. You can't vote in both. Why shouldn't you be able to vote in both? Well,
and that's different in every state.
It's different in every state. And even in Texas, a third, I just came back from Texas, a third of the votes
caucus
for
voting.
President are caucus votes, which means you could have voted in the popular election for Dems or Republicans, and then you come to the caucusing place, usually the same place where the vote was held, after the election polls
closed.
The same closed.
People get to caucus?
And the same people, if you said you're a Democrat, you get to vote again, because a third of the votes come from the caucusing people. So you can vote twice. You could have voted in the popular. So it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy, and that's how it's set up by the Dems and the Republicans. Throughout the 50 states, there's no consistency. You might say, well, the people of the state, no, the people of the state don't even decide what they want in these primaries. It's the state legislature and whichever party's in control at the time. And that's how we got stuck with this early election date that doesn't even follow the Democratic Party rules. Well, how are we going to redo it? We can't say. We'll find out in a day or two.
Well,
but Ned, you voted. You brought up a point that even Frank Vewick also has here in this column. And if you're going to have a redo, do you mail a ballot to every voter and hope for the best? And should you mail them to the people that actually voted Republican too? How do you know who voted Republican?
Oh, they know, because when what happens is, if you're going to do this by going to your city clerk, that's one thing. Who in the world is going to mail you this ballot? The only person that mails you ballots is the city clerk, right? The city clerk knows if you voted in the Republican primary or the Democratic primary. Why do I know that? Because when I found out the Democratic Party's primary wasn't going to be a race of any interest, I said, why should I vote in it? I'll vote in the Republican primary. And I voted in the Republican primary so I could vote for Ron Paul, because I thought he made a lot of sense. Now I might be punished and not be able to vote in the Democratic primary, of which I'm a member of the Democratic Party. All you got to do is pay $5,
right? Yeah,
and you're a member of the Democratic Party. It's not like joining the Communist Party.
I'm a member of several just because I like to read their internal newsletters. I like to find out what's going on, you know, actually. So, and Frank raises all these questions that a lot of haven't even been on the national news.
What does he say?
Well, he said, do you just mail a ballot to every voter and hope for the best? Does this include those who voted Republican too? Because if not, it should, he says. As I said in January, anyone could cross over in a primary, and there was no real purpose for Dems to vote in the January primary, as you didn't, you know, because they were told their vote would not be counted. So a number of them might have crossed over, as I did too, by the way. I'm not a Republican, but I voted in the Republican primary also, and coincidentally for Ron Paul.
Yeah.
So there you go. I admit it. I have Republican libertarian leanings anyway. Anyway, he says this has to be considered too. You know,
but
he says,
about all the Republicans that voted in a Democratic primary to make sure that Hillary won, because they think they could beat Hillary.
That she would be the easier candidate. Right. There was crossovers
the
other way,
all
too,
over
folks.
The place.
Right. And then how is this handled, says Frank Bewick. Does each city mail out the ballots, and does each city then have to check each return ballot against their voter registration list to make sure that every vote is legitimate? It would take them a month of Sundays just to make certain that every vote is legitimate.
They wouldn't do that. What they do is mail it only to the Democratic people who filed the Democratic primary.
But the paper ballots, they have to be counted by hand, unless they're the cards that could be sent through a machine or something for counting. And who's going to print these cards?
It would be
cards?
A punch card anyway, just like
Probably, okay.
Vote absentee, I do. They mail you a punch card.
Right, absentee is a paper ballot. There's no punch card on absentee, right.
Now they're circling the hole, I'm sorry.
Right, yeah. Would every registered voter be mailed a ballot, he says? Would ballots be mailed to all registered voters, even those who voted in the Republican primary? All this must be considered when computing time and cost. Then hundreds, maybe even thousands of new faces must be hired and trained just to get this project rolling. And the cost, it's estimated, is $10 to $12 million for both states. I know in Michigan, the big primary election was $17 million. That was money that the state could not well afford, but it was $17 million. And now, maybe if it's just mailed out, $10 to $12 million in each state. Now, Florida has said because they're richer down there, that the state is willing to pay the $12 million to do the election. In Michigan, according to the governor, and I think the will of the legislature, we don't have the money to do it.
I thought the candidates are saying that they would pay for it, $6 million.
Well, some have suggested. Well,
that'd be worth it to them.
Kucinich won't be back in for $6 million, of course.
Well, he's not going to be.
Well, see, but that's not fair then. I mean, in primary voters, I mean, we're at the stage now where Kucinich and Edwards are not in.
Right, they're out.
But if I still think they're the best Democratic candidate and I want representatives to be tied to vote for them anyway, then I should still have the right to do that. I know that seems crazy. Why vote for somebody who's not in there?
They got out of the race.
They got out of the... Well, Kucinich was in the race, though, in
the
last primary at that time, yeah.
He was on the ballot, too.
Right. And, of course, Frank Bewick, in his column here, is also up in arms. He says, talk about a mess. He says, I'm not even sure if these numbers would cover the cost of even one of the states, this $10 to $12 million. And,
you know what they'll do? They'll wait till after the other primaries. If the numbers don't make any difference, mm-hmm. then they won't do it. If mm-hmm. the numbers become important to decide who the winner might be, then they'll find a way to do it.
Well, it'll be very interesting. I go back to saying what I think Frank Bewick said earlier, too, and some other pundits here, and even one legislator in the House in Washington, D.C. If we're going to have primaries, let's set down rules so that there is, first of all, an equitable way that every state does its primary, and that I hope they don't exclude third parties from it, although I bet the bill does say it'll only be Dems and Republicans, and representational awarding of delegates, however many delegates the Dems and the Republicans might have, is that it's not just winner-take-all. I think that's patently unfair and undemocratic, and so you want, as many states do have, as their state requirements, representational, so that,
I have a solution to that problem. It's very mm-hmm. easy, and I don't understand why they don't do it. Number one, you could take a state like Michigan. I think we have 15 congressional districts. Whoever wins that congressional district gets the delegation from that, however many, if that's one or two delegates. It's very mm-hmm. easy to do nationally. And then you'd say, okay, what do we do with the popular vote? If whoever gets the most in the popular vote, that's the other equalizer, gets the two votes for the two senators. That's what they ought to do in the Electoral College. We don't even do that on the Electoral College.
Yeah.
But the primary issue...
Don't get me started on Electoral College.
But if you handled it that way, then mm-hmm. the whole issue of these states that have more cows, dogs, horses than they got people, they got two senators, they got one congressman, then whatever the popular vote is, then you get the two senators. But in the state that only has one, you'd get three anyway. What should happen in primaries which would avoid this foolishness, and in case you don't know who was behind it, Debbie Dingell and Senator Levin were the ones that wanted to do this fast catch-up. Mm-hmm. All you have to do to solve this problem is have regional primaries in similar markets. You just take the New England states. Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. It's all the Boston market, television market. You give them a primary in New England, and those they work that area. Then you do the Mid-Atlantic states. You do New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware. That's the Mid-Atlantic primary. That follows 2 weeks later. Each group, each section has a 2 to 3 week period to campaign in. Then you go to the southern states and the southeast corner. Then you go to the Midwest. You go to Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Minnesota. And you start treating every region respectfully. And all these primaries wouldn't take 8 to 10 weeks at the most. Instead of this foolishness, we have two-year campaigns that cost a fortune. Yeah. And who cares? Why should New Hampshire and Iowa, if you win those two places and you're there for 2 years, you're guaranteed the rest doesn't count for anything.
Okay, And though you're making some really good proposals there, the representative that had the idea for setting some guidelines for every state, okay, to make every state's primary somewhat more fair or equitable, also suggested a way, and your original primary idea set this, that they would rotate the starting times from every 4 years. So that it wouldn't be New Hampshire as the first state. It might be Michigan as the first state.
Might be California.
That there would be a rotation plan so that over, I think, four election periods, every area of the country would be the first one to go.
Especially what I suggested, instead of beginning in New England, you could begin with California, Oregon, or Washington, too. That's right. That would even make it fair.
It could rotate. And you would know in the future
it
which
would
one would come first.
Much easier to campaign in this situation.
However, and this idea is in honor of Rose Bogart and the other tax cutters out there, I don't think we need primaries at all. We don't need primaries at all, and we could save all that money nationwide. Why? It's because primaries are not part of the Constitution. They're not required. They're not part of our political process, and each one is patently unfair because it doesn't include not just other political parties than the Dems and Republicans, but independent candidates.
Include them all.
Every person who wants to run for office does not need to be part of a political party. Not for president, not for senator, House of Representatives. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you must do that. It's not part of our founding fathers' philosophy, folks.
Yeah, they ripped up the Constitution anyway, so what are we worrying about?
Well, my point is, if a party wants to exist, fine. Who better than the party itself and the people that actually pay fees to be a party member and attend the party caucuses, let them pick their best candidates among their own party faithful.
You think you got much say in that in the process?
Well, yeah. In fact, in 72, I hate to go back that far, but a populist movement brought George McGovern into the Democratic Party as their nominee. Now, the party regulars hated that, but what had happened was new members, grassroots members, came into the political party, joined, and voted for McGovern. Now, the party regulars said, uh-oh, we're losing power here. The grassroots are taking hold. Now, McGovern did pretty badly in the national election, but that's because the regulars boycotted and or fought against McGovern because he was taking their power away. In fact, he was a populist candidate. And I saw nothing wrong with that. The rules back in 72 were that the party decides through their caucuses and through their national convention who is going to be their nominee. And at least it's the people who believe in the Democratic Party and its principles.
You know how they run elections in France?
It's not interlopers, you know what I'm saying, coming in to vote against or for the worst candidate, which is happening in our primary system. I don't think, just to summarize, and then you can have your comment, and then we've got to end the show, unfortunately, Ned, but I don't believe in any primary system. There's none that I hear of that are fair, and they all cost us a fortune, and that's state government and also the campaigning amounts. There's other ways to do it. Look at Canada. I'm sorry, we don't have time now, but Ned, final comment from you.
Paper ballot Canada.
Yeah.
If you've ever run for office like I have, let me tell you something. Less than 10 or 11% of the people, voters, are voting in primaries. That's the tragedy.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
So right. This it's very important. But what we should be doing is a runoff system. If you have a fast election, you got 12, 14 people in the city of Dearborn that want to be on the city council. You have a fast one, you eliminate 14, you take the top four, then you have another one. We just did that for the president of France. Right now, in the president of Armenia, there was an election. There were four candidates. One guy got 52%, so there's no runoff election.
Does that make sense? There's another name for that, but that is a reform for elections that should be in place.
Right. So then if the whole idea is to try to get in that top two or top three...